Hey, friends. Ask Robin Black. Hashtag Ask Robin Black. What is this? And why are we doing it? Okay, what is this? Sundays after a fight, I never have anyone to talk to. So I end up sitting on Twitter, chatting with people about the fight and the amazing things that happened the night before. And Chase is on the board, wanted to kind of create an environment where we could do that. And the intention is to do this live so that we can chat, I can have a laptop, we can do it in real time. But today we're just going to kind of get the feel of taking your questions and answering them as honestly as we can and having fun with it. The other why is I really rely on my brother John Ramdean when we do our job. And I never kind of do anything on my own, and I was really scared to do that. And I'm always telling people, my friends and Rammer and people like that, that you have to do things you're frightened of. So I'm kind of scared to just hang out with you guys by myself with no John Ramdean, no nobody else. So we're going to do it. And yeah, so any feedback is going to be super helpful because we're going to make this up as we go along. But we intend to do this every Sunday or as many Sundays as we can after big fights, Chase and I. So any feedback is going to be really helpful. But otherwise, I'm going to take your questions, and I'm going to answer them as best I can. Last night was a crazy, crazy night of fights. Really absurd. Moving. And that's why I so often kind of sound evangelical talking about fights, because they're special. There's this special moment in time where these brilliant athletes, at great personal risk and at great sacrifice to themselves over weeks and months in their lifetime, come together to do that. And last night, UFC 206 was the kind of night where I will want to use that show to explain how I see fighting and why I see it the way that I do and why lots of us do. There's a couple of things I have here. So I got a Bruce Lee book of quotes. We may use this at some point. I got my notebook that I always have with me that I wrote a bunch of stuff from last night. I got a whiteboard. I don't know if I'm going to use it today, but I use it a lot to kind of diagram ideas and explain ideas about fighting and work out ideas of my own. So we might use some of this stuff. I don't know. I really don't know. It's going to be fun. So what do you think, Chase? Should we just get to it? I got a thumbs up from Chase. So we're going to get right into it. First question. Are Cub and Choi actually human beings or well-engineered fight machines? Okay, legit question. I know what you're getting at. And the answer is probably somewhat both. You know, when you think about it, whatever you end up being is kind of an engineered something. If you're wandering through life just sort of taking whatever is given to you and responding to it and reacting to it, you're not an engineered anything. But if you spend your life purposefully trying to get better, trying to improve at things, trying to study, and you're in search of growth and greatness, you end up engineering yourself into something. And both of these guys have dedicated their life to becoming well-engineered fight machines. So as much as I know that was kind of probably joking, when you think about it, every choice that these guys have made in the last decade and more of their life has been about last night, has been about becoming the type of human being capable of doing what we watched last night. And so the answer, I think, is they are well-engineered fight machines and they are human beings. But that idea, you know, about purposefully setting yourself towards a path, I think is one of the ways you can study these fighters. You know, look at these guys and see, you're not going to go fight a man in a cage in the Air Canada Center in Toronto, but whatever it is you're trying to work towards, you ask yourself if you're taking steps every day to get in that direction or if you're responding to whatever life gives you. And you can ask yourself that question, and if the answer is, I don't know, then you've started asking. And if the answer is, well, I'm not moving in a particular direction, then you start to do that. And it's one little step at a time. And people who do great and brilliant things ended up making small little choices along the way that directed them into that. I guess that's the answer. And this is going to be really fun. I'm really glad to have somebody being whoever is watching this right now, to chat about fighting on Sundays with, you know, you wake up in the morning and this brilliant stuff has happened, and you can watch a press conference where they talk about it, but you can think about it yourself and delve into it and peel back some of the layers of what you watched in a fight and try to discover what you can take away from that, whether that be being entertained or inspired or learning something or just losing your mind and yelling at a television. All right, Chase, how do we do in our first question? I got a thumbs up from Chase. I'm still relying on somebody. It's a weird thing. It's a strange thing. The idea of doing this for me was weird, to sit by myself and talk to somebody without Rammer. I rely on – he asks a lot of questions. But I have 15 questions here, so it'll be fun. Okay, was fight of the year Du Ho Choi versus Cub Swanson, or is it Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor 2 still? Right now, Sunday, the Sunday after watching that, and I was in the arena and I had analyzed in detail. It's interesting they bring up Conor and Nate because I had deeply broke that down too. And the act of breaking down fights is to study them. For me, the process of building one of these takes 40 or 50 hours. You know, you look at, watch everything over and over again, and you're looking for little details, and then you're having to find the moments of the fight to cut, and then you're trying to feel the story and all of that. And so by the time you do that, you're so attached to it. Cub is a friend, and Du Ho Choi is somebody I've been commentating since he was like 20 years old. But with all that, even understanding all the bias of all that, that's the greatest fight I've seen. You know, that comes to mind, the feeling of watching that fight. I think it was the greatest fight I've ever seen in a lot of ways. But, you know, after I watched Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz, I felt that too. There's something in having two men or women that are capable of doing that, that bring that out of each other. You know, Nate Diaz storming back to win round 5, you know, that takes it to another level. McGregor being forced to dig deep after losing round 3 to come back and reassert himself in round 4. The skill and the fighting and the technical nature and the art and all of that is definitely, you know, a part of what makes a great fight. But sometimes that feeling, that emotional roller coaster of what's happening, being able to like taste in your mouth what is required of them, knowing that most of us could not do, you know, as we are today, without the work and the growth that these guys have had, wouldn't be capable of doing that. They're equally inspiring. But right this minute, right now, I feel like I saw the best fight that I've ever seen in my life. I got to talk to Cub after, and I got to talk to Greg Jackson, and I got to talk to Joel Diaz, his boxing coach, and I watched it with Calvin Gastelum and a lot of the other fighters that were there, and everybody felt that. That was something very special, and I think it's the greatest fight I've ever seen. That may change in a week. I may watch some other fight and feel that way. It's hard to really say, you know, what is the best piece of art you've ever seen? You know, what's the best song you've ever heard? You know, there are so many, but it was pretty fucking special, that's for sure. Okay, I got two that are kind of connected, so we're gonna look at these. Adam Repa says, the flaws RDA, EA, Barbosa exposed are still there. Does Anthony Pettis need a new coach and mental training? Okay. Flaws is the wrong – that's not how I look at it. I'm not looking for flaws or weaknesses. These people are in the 99th percentile of something, doing it at the highest level under the most extreme conditions. These are not flaws. These are – just moments that take place. And another one connected, Randy Lehman. I wonder what has happened to Pettis. Obvious talent, skill, natural ability. Would you agree it's 90% a psychological issue? So those things are connected. So I saw those questions, and you think about them. There's a number of things, thoughts that I have on that. One is that we should be talking about Max Holloway much more than Anthony Pettis in this moment. But at the same time, our brains and our perspectives go where they want to go. So, but I want to talk more about the great things that Holloway did than what he was able to do to Anthony, because it's not that Anthony failed in some way. It's that Max succeeded in some way. But so I just pulled out this is just some of Bruce Lee's, quotes. You know, we have the Dav Jeet Kune Do here, and we have lots of stuff. I fucking got Bruce Lee tattooed on me. This is a Bruce Lee shirt. I'm getting a little deep right now on that. I realize as much as it's important to have mentors. You can create mentors. You can find mentors in real life. You can use famous people as mentors. That's important. But as I suddenly say all that, I realize I'm maybe going a little too far that way. But having said that, let's and that's what you need to do wherever you are and whatever you're doing. You need to be self-aware. Check in. Am I too much of this? Am I going that? Is this a good place to dip my toe? Have I learned something here? I mean, self-awareness is a really fucking important thing, and it's a skill and it's a tool, like leg kicks or jabs or anything. It's something you have to keep training and keep nurturing, and it is. For me, as I'm thinking about it right now, it's great to be inspired by the greatest martial arts mind ever. And yes, I know he was an actor. The fact that you also acted, and I don't know who I'm talking to right now, because people would be like, that guy was an actor. Yeah, the fact that you acted in addition to being a brilliant philosophical mind that studied the martial arts is incidental. But it's good to have mentors. It's good to study things. But I think as much as I'm going through a year of deeper appreciation for Bruce Lee's principles, and that is shaping the way that I'm looking at fighting and the way that I'm answering these questions and the way that I study the thing that I love. That's great. I don't think you stay on that path. I think you meander in and out of different mentors and different inspirations and different take from different places as you grow. So I'm just going to pull out a few things on what Bruce Lee said. And this one's on being human and the mind. All thought is partial. It can never be total. Thought is the response of memory, and memory is always partial. Which makes sense, right? Because memory is the result of experience, so thought is the reaction of the mind, which is conditioned by experience. And a few other thoughts. The mind must be wide open in order to function freely in thought, for a limited mind cannot think freely. And I think that's relevant here. And then we get deep, as Bruce did sometimes. The waters are in motion all the time, but the moon retains its serenity. The mind moves in response to the 10,000 situations, but remains ever the same. So there's some conflict in some of those thoughts. But they're interesting thoughts, and quotes are good because they can make you start to look at them. What does it mean? Is he right? Did he want to be right? Was he just theorizing? These are good exercises to do. But I think the part about the free mind is kind of a key. I mean, if you go into a fight, you're hoping to have a free mind. So Chase and a couple of us were watching Cub and Do Ho Choi again. And Brandon asked me, is he thinking right here? And there you look, and there are moments he's not thinking at all. And those are the best moments. I talked to Greg Jackson about Cowboy, and that was the very same thing. If we create Cowboy into a combat genius, and that's the exact words that Greg used, that genius, when left to its own devices and allowed to do its thing, will be brilliant. If it's overthinking, if it's holding back, or if it's trying too hard, And Pettis is definitely thinking right now. Pettis is there's things that are affecting him. That could have been weight. That could be life. That could be pressure. He talked to Ramdeen a little bit about being embarrassed from some of his performances. And I think that can be a valuable thing to go back and look at what you did. But embarrassment, if he was somebody who was feeling that emotion of embarrassment, that feeling of embarrassment, did he feel that when he missed weight? Did he question himself? Because you have to choose to stop cutting weight. And to choose to stop cutting weight is to choose to quit, So I feel for the guy. I'm a big fan of his. There was a part of that question asked about a new coach. No. Duke is, if you get to know Duke, if you see his process and you see his dedication to fighting and to Pettis and to his fighters, you would never ask that question. That's crazy. And also, among one of the great things coaches do, and Duke is one of these, he'll let you go travel. You know, Anthony went and trained with Greg a little bit, and he's traveled around. He's trained with other coaches. That's what a great coach really does. They're not fearful that their fighter will leave them, because why would somebody leave you if you're brilliant? And if you're brilliant, let them go, and they'll come back. So it's not a coaching thing. It's a life thing. Life is hard, man. Life is challenging. And when you meander through your life, if you – accept the reality that there are many challenges every day, all day, curveballs, unexpected phenomena. And you accept that as a reality, and you don't need to respond to all of it. Everything isn't like, oh my God, something terrible happened, or oh my God, something amazing happened. These are just aspects of the path. And I don't know if that's where Anthony's at. I didn't get a chance to talk to him a ton this week. And he didn't feel like he wanted people to talk to him. He felt like it was his job to talk to people. But you hope that he's a brilliant athlete, and he just seems like a really sweet guy. And you hope that when you see somebody of that talent level, you hope that they can do what they were put on earth to do, which in his case is fight in a cage to entertain and show beauty. And so you hope that he can do that. But there, we've talked about Anthony Pettis a lot. Max Holloway, if we look at well, Pettis failed, or, you know, oh, there's flaws. You put a lesser man in there. You put somebody not capable of what Max Holloway was capable of, and you don't see any of those things. There's not flaws. It's not flaws that RDA exposed. These are the greatest elite in something. And the idea of seeing that level of greatness in anything, this should be something we really strive to do in our lives. And a lot of people tend to minimize it or be happy, have a strange feeling. I'm glad it's not as good as I thought it was. I'm glad that we've exposed it. And that's a new thing, I think, in our culture. I don't think that's how we are. I don't think that's how people are made. I don't think that's how our brains work naturally. I think it's a reaction to some of the culture that we live in, some of the challenges of life, the unfairness of life, that we respond that way. But I don't think that's good. I think some of it is self-perpetuating. When you see somebody be really hateful to something, my thought is sometimes they probably have a lot of challenges. It's probably very hard to be them. Their life is difficult. They're in some kind of pain, whether they know it or not. But if they keep reacting that way, they'll perpetuate that pain. They'll be negative, which will bring more negativity, which will give them a negative perspective. So they wander through life. Instead of expecting that cab driver to be polite, they expect them to be rude. So without knowing it, they are rude. That is not a good thing. If you're seeking happiness in your life, if you're moving towards something better, you don't look at these things with that negative eye. You look now and you look at how incredible it was that Max Holloway was capable of taking somebody so skilled and so talented and so unique as Anthony Pettis and slowly breaking him apart in front of us using skills that he'd built. Then 2 years ago, he couldn't have done that. And that's another thing that's cool about fighting that you can take from it. 2 years ago, Max Holloway could not have done that. Why can he do that now? Because he's trained. He strove to improve himself. He's become smarter. He's become stronger. He's become more talented at the thing that he does. He understands himself better. He's become more courageous. That just didn't happen. He did that through purposeful training in his life, choices that he made to make himself do that. That's the cool takeaway from this. That's how you take something from it that makes your life better. You look at Max Holloway 3 years ago, and you look at Max Holloway now, you study the things that he did, and you say, I could do those things. I could become a better brother or friend or coworker or, fight analyst or whatever it is you do. That's what they did. That's what these fighters are doing. That's what we're watching right in front of us. And if you don't see it, just – I was going to say look harder. Maybe look softer. You know, maybe just soften it up and kind of feel it, because And I'm obsessed with fighting, and so are you, because you're watching a show where one guy sits by himself in front of a blue thing with a couple of things talking to somebody on Twitter that's not there. You're obsessed with fighting, too. But it could be anything. You can do this by watching a football player or watching an entrepreneur or watching mentoring under somebody close to you. People are getting better every day at things, and that's what we're all supposed to do. And that's what we're supposed to be taking away from whatever we're looking at, is figuring out how to get better at shit by seeing other people get better at stuff. There's something called motor neurons in your brain. Part of your brain is designed for that purpose. I think I'm going off on a crazy tangent, but I think that's what we're going to do here. I think we're going to do that a lot, and I think that's all right. I'm just going to sit here with my iced Americano in my JRE mug, and I'm going to talk crazy shit to you guys, and it's going to be really fun. All right. Okay, so that takes us to question number four. Chase, great job lining up these questions. Are people sleeping on Jose Aldo Jr.? Blessed is tearing it up, but Edgar had nothing for Jose. That's a great point. We tend to react very – this again, I when I kind of get out and start watching, which is really nerdy to do, but those are some of the kinds of things that I do with my – I'm just eternally curious on fighting. And there's all these different layers. I learned a lot this week from Dwayne Ludwig and a number of other coaches and stuff. Dwayne, one of the ways he looks at fighting and what his thing is peeling back more layers. There's always another layer. So once you've understood the spider web of what's in front of you, you can find another layer. Greg Jackson talked about sometimes fighting is very big and sometimes it's very, very small. In that perspective, too. So you go out and have a wide perspective of something and a small perspective. You go, if you're studying anything, you go look at it from a different angle. You look at it through a different lens. So every now and again, I'm curious about how people are consuming this, because my job is what I see my job, my vocation is to. The way that somebody studies wine, that people studied wine for hundreds of years and now they understand it, I want to study this that way and share what I learn, and other people will study it and we'll all kind of take this art form and make people see it that way. So that's what my job is. But so when I'm looking at the layer of how people watch things, people respond very quickly to things, very quick. Everything has heavy meaning. So there was a fighter I'm thinking of, a heavyweight. But I just can't think of who it is. But one of them knocks out another guy, and that guy needs to retire. The whole world freaks. That guy's got to retire. He's got to retire. And then next fight, he knocks out somebody else, and he's on top of the world. This guy's never been so good, but that other guy should retire. Everything's heavy meaning, big, huge results and responses to everything. So whatever is in the front of our minds, Max Holloway, unbeatable, just can't be beat. It's right there. We're seeing it. We're feeling it. We see his confidence. Did we forget that what Jose Aldo is? Now, he got knocked out by Conor McGregor in one big punch that fell down. We saw that. We've seen that hundreds of times. And I think that can – our brains will interpret that over and over and over and over again in ways that – gives it different meaning. He got hit and he fell down and he was unconscious. And then when he woke up and he went back to work and he refocused himself, he was still fucking Jose Aldo. You know what I mean? Like that punch meant what it meant in the moment. And then he went back to being Jose Aldo. And I was a victim of that too. It's very normal. I'm not judging it. You shouldn't judge it either. You don't need to judge something to look at it. You can look at it, see it with no judgment, whether this is in yourself or in other things, and then see what it means or find meaning in it or figure out what to do with that knowledge. He's Jose Aldo. I mean, Frankie and Mark Henry, and Mark Henry is a brilliant coach, really brilliant. You talk to him, you see it. He took responsibility for that fight. He said, he was shocked. Nobody expected Jose Aldo to fight in totally different, backing up. His game had been for years, his game and Henan Barao's game, and the game that made Nova Yunao, they became so good at it that they were the best in the world at it, and it worked for years. Pressure. It was pressure, leg kicks, well, you're backing up, And they were not afraid of the single, because the answer to this, to the single as they move forward, was they made the single leg a failure for you. You shot a single leg and they fucked you up. And that's the answer to it. So it's like, I can't fight this pressure style, because if I do, people take a single leg. So you don't just not fight the pressure style. You find an answer for that single leg. And the best answer is make it a penalty for them to try. So they got so good, they created a whole world of defending a single leg and turning it into offense on you. And then that allowed them to play this pressure game for so long. And they were the best in the world at it. Others imitated it. There were other aspects to it. There would be a moment of pushback. And they realized that if they put a lot of chips in that first or second round when you did push back and just refused to, you know, stood to tuck the chin, and just there was going to be a risk in that fight anyways, but the risk for the next 20 minutes would be minimized if I took a lot of risk right now for 1 minute. So they did that. It was a psychological choice. It was brilliant. And that was them. And we mistakenly thought that was them forever, but nothing's you forever. You are whatever you make yourself, whatever you train to. And that is one of the flaws of analysis, where analysis, you're analyzing what they were. And it's meaningless when, oh, man, we need to throw leg kicks on this guy. Like, that is 3 years ago. We got to take this way further than that. We've got to – if we're going to really – it would be simple to just sit there and still go, you know, this guy stepped here, and what he does, he throws – and just make that it. Where the path took us to analysis, where we just showed all the techniques that were happening, and we stayed there for years. But we don't want to stay there. We want to go further, you know. That's what – and going further sometimes will make you less successful. Because maybe you go too far or you lose people. It would have been safer to stay back there, but you keep going. But anyway, so Jose Aldo, we mistakenly started to think that that was a fixed Jose Aldo. That's not a fixed Jose Aldo. Jose Aldo is a brilliant talent that is ever-changing. He just happened to stay at that stage of his path for years because it worked. You know, it worked. What? So he didn't change much. As soon as it stopped working, and as soon as they stopped after that 13-second knockout, they looked around and they're like, I don't think this is a sure thing anymore. And in fact, other people now, because we pressured, other people imitated that. That became a part of the game. People are responding to pressure better. Let's do that. And that's what Jose and Dede Pedernales did. They let Frankie pressure, and they backed up. They moved out on ankles, and they intercepted him for 25 minutes? It was 15 minutes. Sometimes they blend into one. They blend into it. You picture that fight, and it isn't a minute or a position. It's just that feeling of what it was. But he retreated and invited, and that surprised them. And it surprised. It was incredible to see a guy do a full rebuild and a coach as at that level. And he's still young. Jose Aldo is still young. So yes, everybody is forgetting about Jose Aldo. Max Holloway is brilliant, and he is going to be better in 2 weeks, and he's going to be better in 6 months, and he's going to be better in a year, and he might be able to beat Jose Aldo right now. He believes he can, and that's a big part of the equation. He very well might be able to. But yes, the question was, are people forgetting, sleeping on Jose Aldo? And the answer is yes, they are. Okay, this is interesting. So, how did it feel when Cub talked about, quote, hearing your voice and making it art during the fight? Okay, so I talked to Cub Swanson after the fight. He's a friend, and he is an artist that I think my job involves art. I think I'm on an artist path, and my art is made using the art of great artists. So I guess I'm like, you know, a mashup. I don't know what I am. I don't know what it is. But it's we take the art of these brilliant artists, and then I try to present it in a way that I can take the way that I view it and the way that I experience it, which is special to me, and it means a lot to me, and I try to make other people see it that way. I think that's my job. I think that's my art. I think that's my vocation. And how and where I do that, right now I do it for Fight Network, who I love, and I contribute the odd thing for the UFC, and I think I just do it. I'll do it at home, and I'll do it if Fight Network it became the Food Network tomorrow. I would be sad, because these are my friends and this is what I love, but I would still do it. And if I moved to Korea, I would do it. This is what I do. Sorry, I'm on a tangent. I think that's going to happen a lot. But I need these artists' art to do it. So that's why I have such appreciation and value for them, because I need them, you know? My obsession is the ever-changing living thing that is combat between humans. And so I need these brilliant artists. And Cub has become one of my very favorites for I'm not exactly sure the exact reason, but it was early. And I'm happy about that. And I like him personally, but he's also an artist that is a part of what I do. So I tell these stories, and it never would have crossed my mind that I would have any little influence in it. It's irrelevant to the work. The work is to make the work. But there were coaches that were telling me about what they did with my work. And then for Cub to tell me that in the middle of the most beautiful fight that I've ever seen, he heard my voice, it fucking freaks me out a little bit in a really great way. I would have never thought that was a part of it. So it felt very cool and humbling, incredibly humbling, and stuff like that. Then I try to back out and just look at my job now. So my job is to tell the story. I'm not a very good interviewer. It's never been kind of my nature. I don't have a affinity. I don't like doing it necessarily. I just like to talk to the people who I'm deeply curious about. So Pollock is a very good interviewer. John Ramdean is a very good interviewer. So they do a lot more of it. But when it's somebody that I want to talk to, or I have some connection with, or I'm deeply curious about, I want to talk to them. But interviewing is a skill set. I'm pretty good at breaking down fights and other things in my job, but I'm not super great at that. A good interviewer, somebody was skilled in interviewing, Ariel Helwani, John Pollock, Rammer, people like that. When Cobb said that, they would have followed that up. They would have gone in there and dug into that and made that a story, because that's the job. And I couldn't really do that. I didn't know what to say, and it was weird, and I stopped the interview. I was touched and moved, but I stopped the interview early, and I didn't know really – it was really – yeah, I don't know. It was moving, and I'm very honored at that idea, but it's also odd in a great way. So I don't know what to say. I'll think about that more. But fighting means a lot to me for I don't know what reason exactly. It's just the thing that inspires me. I learn from it. I study it. I'm obsessed with it. And take your very favorite fighter and your very favorite artist and have an idea that in some small way, the art that you gave back, you were doing to just share the story, had even a 1% influence in any way on him making that art, is something I'd never considered before. But it really does fucking mean an incredible amount to me, and it's moving to me. So we'll move on. Okay. Well, yeah, more on that, because it was fucking amazing, right? The fight was just unreal. So after putting on a fight of the year performance, where does Du Ho Choi go from here? Okay. So a lot of times people at the press conference, the media, so they ask, so what's next for you? And I always hate that because it happens so shortly after this amazing thing that we're just forgetting about. But I understand that question now, the next day, because you just saw how incredible Du Ho Choi was. It's connected to another one, I think, here. Is it good for Choi to lose at this stage of his career so he can be in his prime when he fights for a title in the future? That was Karthi5293, and I say that because that is a fucking brilliant question. And I think the answer to that, history will say, when we look into the future, if it's almost 2017, when Du Ho Choi is the featherweight champion of the world in 2018, and I think there's a very good chance that will happen, if he continues, because we can't see the future, and for that to happen requires growth. But some of that growth required this loss. So he's a brilliant artist and fighter, and really sweet and interesting human being, compelling, which is why people really have taken to him, as in addition to the fact that with his ball cut, he saunters in there and knocks people out cold, knocks fools out cold with his knuckles. But so he's a – but he does need still to be greater, and he wants to be greater. He has a philosophy of growth, a philosophy of finding, you know, becoming greater and greater and greater. And this loss will be huge for him. This is he doesn't feel it today. And I saw when he walked past me on the way out, he was all marked up. I don't know if he'll share photos. He might. He should be very proud of that fight. But he was there with his girl and somebody else, and he could barely walk, and he was going to the hospital. And so I know he probably doesn't feel great today. But in 18 months, when he looks back, if he's holding that belt or if he is where he should be and will be if he continues his growth, he'll look back at this moment as one of the most important moments of his life. No doubt about that. It will make him better. He tasted that next level. And, you know, the technical of that fight really came down to – and I talked to Greg about it. I talked to Joel Diaz about it. And, you know, there's a little sight in when you play a video game, and you can spot that sight, and then you press the button and you shoot. And Choi does that. That's the assess, analyze, and execute. He tracks you down, and when the sight is on, he puts you out. And they had him in the state of never sighting that throughout that fight. He never sighted it. And that's what he did in the other three. And that's what we looked at in the breakdown. And that's what Joel talked about. And that's what Greg talked about. And that's what Cubs talked about. Keep him in that state of still trying to process. Because once it's processing, ding, 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 you're done. And maybe he had little moments of that, but never the clean one. Never the shut off. Never the button. And so to do that was really – it required heart and pressure and desire to win and intensity and ferocity that very few have, like Cub Swanson. One of the reasons I'm so enamored with the artist and or the artist's skills. But the skills are this, and then the attribute, who you are, what you're capable of, what you can do is another thing, but then they blend together. And they become the one thing. You have a canvas, and you have different painting, and you have different layers of it, and you stipple something on. All of those things are the little different ingredients. But in the end, they all come together. And Choi had never – I had commentated many of his fights in deep, and he had been taken to a third round. He had been in insane fights, and I was saying that to Kelvin Gastelum while we were watching. I'm like, I've commentated his fights where he's been in fights of this nature and still won. And that was part of that feeling. I felt sick to my stomach watching that fight with – joy, but fear and anxiety is fucking heavy. But yes, this will make him better, and he's going to be one of the great – he is already one of the true great talents at this young age, and he has so much further he can go. And that's the interesting part about that is, you know, there was a friend of mine was doing an interview, and I was showed Rammer, his buddy, and I said, you know, he's doing really good talking about fighting on TV. And I said, he's doing really good. And I said, but, you know, this is only like his 50th or 75th one. And Rammer said, you know, we talked about, and it just happens to be our job. It could be anything. But when you look at something, it's like somebody would go, oh, wow, you've done that 100 times. You're really good at it. That's probably true, but it's all just a continuum because – you, when you've done that 5,000 times, will look at you who's done it 100 times and realize how shitty you were by comparison. And that's this idea, and Bruce Lee talked about it a lot, of you will find plateaus, but you must go beyond them. The plateaus are where you think you've reached what you're going to be. You, Du Ho Choi is brilliant. This is what I am. I'm Du Ho Choi. I'm a 95 out of 100 and all these things. And that's where he was. But now he's got to find a new 100. That 100 has to get bigger. It's not that he goes from 95 to 97 to 98. The 100 rises up so high that he's only a 35 out of his potential 100. And he needed something to push him to that level. He did. I don't always put a lot in what they say, although I want to talk to the ones that I'm curious about. And I feel like, you know, it's interesting to me. But a lot of the time, these guys, their job is to say some shit now. But in moments like that, you get a lot of truth. And Choi, through his translator, said that if losing feels this bad, I'm just going to be even more motivated to get better. And right there, you know, only 22 or 23 minutes earlier that fight had touched with a glove touch. And then he had 17 minutes, 5-1, 5-1, 5, and then a few minutes after. And already by that stage, he was at the point where it's now about growth. How can I be greater? So Du Ho Choi is going to be a world champion one day. I have no doubt about that. I have no doubt about that, of course, there's immense doubt. So you contradict yourself sometimes, even as your words come out, if you're really being honest. Of course there's doubt, because all of this has to happen. And the simple black swan events that you can think about to illustrate your idea is when you say nobody can predict the future on these things is if he destroys his knee in training, it's done. Okay, and it doesn't have to be that big. If he decides he meets a girl that changes his life and his perspective changes, it's done. And that's getting a husband or a wife doesn't do that. I'm just saying that the potential for meeting a single human being can change your entire path. So as much as I, in a moment of thinking about his potential and where he's at mentally and say, oh, I have no doubt he's going to be world champion, as the words come out of your mouth, you have to question them right away. And of course, there's always doubt. But in television, sometimes and when sitting at that desk, my job, as I'm instructed, and the job of every single person that you watch on television talking about sports, sometimes they're told, make a big sweeping statement. It becomes part of your job. They tell Brian Stan to do that. They tell, your favorite hockey commentator to do that. They tell people to do that on music shows and whatever. It's because that creates a response. They want a response from the audience. So when you're angry at something or when you're happy about something or when you tweet about something or when you debate something, that gives value to the people who make television or music or the internet or whatever. So sometimes you're told to do that and sometimes you allow your job to influence you that way. But where possible, I want to tell the truth and I think this is where I can probably do that. So, okay, what? Excuse me. How we doing, Chase?
Around 40 minutes.
40 minutes. Wow. This is fun. Thanks for hanging out with me for this amount of time. I'm sure I've lost some people along the way. But to hang out and be able to think these thoughts out on a Sunday after something like that is a real gift. And like I said, we're going to figure out how to do this live, whether we do it on Facebook Live or we do it on our YouTube channel live, so we can actually chat and interact while we do this. All right. Savid D. Tarkman, you are so amazing at everything you are doing for us! Exclamation point. How much better will you get? Okay, that's very kind. That is very, very kind. People send me kind things sometimes, and it's very nice. It's very, very nice. How much better will you get? I think has been the theme of the whole show for anybody. The big thing that I was talking to my buddy Evan Boris last night, and I was saying, "Well, man, Greg Jackson said this about my work, or this fighter wanted to, whatever." And he said, "You are not as good as they think you are." And then he said, "But you're better than you were a year ago." And he's a very close friend, and I will say equal things to him like that, and it's very valuable. I as quickly as possible. I when somebody gives me a nice compliment, and the only reason I'm having this conversation is because Chase put this on the thing, and because it could be valuable for any of us. If somebody gives you a nice compliment, that is very kind. They did something kind. You should thank them, and it's very appreciative. And then as quickly as possible, you should revert yourself back to a beginner mentality. Beginner mentality, I'm a white belt. I am a fucking white belt. Max Holloway was like, I'm an 0-0 fighter, trying to get 1-0. That beginner mentality, you can keep it for life. And that raising of those plateaus, if somebody thinks that they are amazing, they're done. They are fucking done. If you think you're awesome at something, you are done. You have gone as far as you're going to go. And when these are traps that are out there for you. Because as soon as you think that, now you're going to be wanting to pat yourself on the back. You're going to stop at the path. And that's why we see, and as it relates to my job, that's why we see the same things forever. Somebody called it tail of the tape, and it's been like that forever. Why? You know, somebody says, oh, it's a large volume of punches. We're not supposed to use that word forever. We're not supposed to do anything forever. We're supposed to continue to grow and learn and evolve and innovate and take risks and try and fail. You have to do that forever. And if you're going to do that forever, the easiest way to do it is to, wherever you are, see yourself as a white belt. If you're having a great day, you're a blue belt. So I'm a blue belt. Today, I feel great. I am a fucking blue belt in analyzing fights. If I convince myself I'm a black belt or I'm amazing at it, and again, I don't really want to toot my horn. If I am, I apologize and let me know. I'm just saying this as a philosophy that we can use. But if you think you're amazing, I'm a black belt in analyzing fights. I am the master of the breakdown. I'm fucking done. I'm done. It's all going to be the same. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to think that showing two guys and what they each need to do to win the fight, and then if this guy does this and then he does that and this guy, then I'm done. I'm done. There's nowhere left to go. You're great and you're finished. You have to go back and look at it. I'm not very good. I'm very early in this process. If you do see that, you take that mentality and you believe it, now how far could black belt be? How far can you get? If I'm early in the path, if I think I'm later, oh man, I'm one of the best. Oh, I'm so good. Oh man, you wouldn't believe the shit that I can do. You're fucked. You're done. You have to be able to look at the path and see. You know what excites you? I talked to Dwayne about this, and he's somebody he's an inspiring thinker to me. And how good can you get in 20 years? How good could you get in 20 years? Now, how good could you get in 20 years if you think you're amazing is probably the same and maybe a little worse. Well, the world changes around you. But if you think, how good can I get in 20 years? Now it's very small what you know. Now the idea of your knowledge is very little. And that's exciting because we don't know shit about fighting. We don't know nothing about it. None of us. If you go back 100 years and you watch somebody talk about baseball, you know, now there's all of this deep layered knowledge, stats and figures and numbers and strategies, all of it. It took 100 years. 200 years ago, what do people know about wine? Oh, it's made with grapes. You know, oh, it tastes pretty good. Oh, this one's sweet. That's where we're at with fighting. That's where we're at. And if anybody tells you different, just stop listening to them. If anybody tells you they are an expert in fighting, immediately block them from Twitter and never listen to them again because they're done. If you think you're a novice, if you have a beginner's mentality, if you dream of what could be accomplished in 20 years, now you fucking got something. Now you're lit in a way that you can gather information. You can study yourself. You can oh man, I saw a dead end. Oh man, I got to go back half a year. That's okay. That's worth it. Who do I need to mentor from? You know, you gotta know that you're early in it. And That was a crazy tangent, and it was very fun. And this might be a weird kind of therapy for me. I don't know. Okay, well, while we're on the topic of me, thanks, Chase. Robin, if you were offered to be color commentator for the UFC, would you do it? I think that would be awesome. Thanks, cool Dodger Man 278. Of course. That's my dream. That's one of my ultimate goals, to do commentary for the UFC. And I think I'm going to do that one day. I'm sure of it. I'm going to at least go through life sure that I can achieve that. You have to learn about there's weird shit that you learn about when you are chasing goals, including, okay, I don't understand any of this. So, and one of those was business structure. I don't understand how business structure works. I know about fighting. I used to sing in a rock band where I make up and fucking tight pants. I don't know anything about this. So what are you going to do? I don't know anything about it. I guess hopefully somebody will call me and say, you got to be the color commentator. That's never going to happen. You have to go and now study some shit that you didn't plan to study. And among that is I have to understand. You have to understand how a corporate structure works. I didn't think I'd ever look into that. But I also wasn't afraid to look into it. So people will often, you should replace Joe Rogan. That's a nice idea. First of all, I hope Joe never leaves, because I fucking love Joe. But if he did, it's like, we should get Robin Black in there. That's a... To understand where you might go and the steps it would take to get there, you have to understand the thing. And once you see the thing, so there are a couple of people that manage that. And if you are ever going to do that, you have to get into their system. So I got lucky enough to be able to do that. Thanks to Joe, in fact. I got to commentate Shooto Brazil. Now, the only other people to my knowledge that commentated Shooto Brazil were Dominic Cruz, who commentated the UFC. So it was a farm system to develop his skill so he could do it. And I think Dan Cormier may have done it, which, again, he's come through that system. Make sure he actually can do it. And Bisping, who has not gone to commentary. I don't know if that's a path he's on or not. I have no idea. But and me. So somewhere along the line, I would look and recognize, hey, I'm in the system here. And I commentated four Shooto Brazils for Fight Pass. I still do TKO for Fight Pass. And so they got to know me. And I did one. And then it was pretty good. And I loved it. And I just really enjoyed it. And then I did I needed a second one. I thought I did a good job. And I thought everybody in there saw that I was passionate and prepared. And I fucking prepared, man. And I brought in somebody to help me, you know, gather information. I gathered my own. I studied the fights. Now, nobody can help you with that. You got to – but I don't want anyone to help me with that. That's the pleasure for me. And then I got in there. And then the Don Pfister, the producer, he seemed to really like me. And so I come in there. And then, but you got to get a second one. You do something once and you got to do it. You do it twice and now you're doing it. So I was in Mexico on vacation with my wife. And we'd promised each other we were not going to check our phones. And we had a bunch of tequilas and we came back. And she goes, I just got to check one thing on my phone. And as soon as your partner does that, what do? Okay, so now you're going to do it. Because that's what we all do. I don't want to be on my phone when I'm sitting with my wife having dinner. And I prefer not to. But I also know I have some shit on there that I could deal with or might deal with or I'm somewhat interested in. So when she picks up her phone, that's when I usually do it. And lots of us do that. Probably most of us. So I picked up my phone. And I fucking opened up my thing. And I've got, you know, different fight things. Sometimes I like Bloody Elbow. I don't like their analysis. In fact, sometimes I get angry, so I stopped reading it like a year ago. and it wasn't even – it was just one of the guys thought analysis was, I didn't enjoy that card. It didn't have any finishes. It was a lackluster card. And I just get so angry, and I shouldn't. That's a weakness in me. Anyway, so – but I do like this site, and I like Nate, and I like there's – I don't know. The flavor of it is always kind of there. I actually don't read a lot of the information anymore. But it's there because I need to see so-and-so fight got made because that's going to be part of my job. I don't break stories. So I got to get it somewhere. And Ariel often breaks it, and then it'll end up everywhere pretty quick. So any one of them is probably good. And that one's red, and I like it. I like Steffi Haynes. So it pops up, and, Chris Weidman is out. He's out of the fight with Luke Rockhold, and it's this weekend. It's next weekend. It's 2 weeks away. And I look somewhere, Twitter or something, and it says Michael Bisping has said he will step in. And fuck, if you didn't know it, Michael Bisping was the guy commentating Shooto Brazil that weekend. So I immediately got on the thing and sent Zach Candido, who's the boss there. I said, dude, I will leave my vacation right the fuck now and fly 5.5 hours to L.A., get off the beach. And actually, before I did that, I said to my wife, I said, this is what's happening. She goes, say you'll do it. And I was shocked. Because I didn't think she'd say that, but she's wonderful. So I said I would do it, and I sent him a message. And then I said, if Bisping's out, I notice he's doing Shooto Brazil this weekend. I'm in Cancun, so I'll be away from – I'm on my vacation, so I'll be away from Twitter and email. But I want to tell you I'm 100% in. So if you can't get a hold of me, just know I'm in. We went out. We drank a bunch of tequila. We went swimming. By the time we came back, I opened my email. It said, you're our huckleberry. So I was in. I got to do my second Shooto Brazil, and it went very well, and I got – my legs under me really well in that one. And then they got me doing them, almost all of them, until the UFC got bought. And then now they don't do Shooto Brazil on Fight Pass anymore. So I was in that system. and I was showing them what I could do, and I was showing them consistency, because you got to understand how someone's going to actually hire you to do something. They don't just go, wow, that got to be great. They need to know you. They need to know who you are. What kind of person are you? Are you reliable? Can you do something not once, but 8 times, 10 times? Are you that type of person? You know, et cetera, et cetera. That's what anybody needs to know if you're going to go out and try to get a gig in any kind of capacity. So I was in that system, and I was coming up. Dom, they brought him up. But now they don't do that. So now I'm not in that system. So what do? You just fucking keep doing your thing. You get better every day. And I still contribute some breakdowns for them. I do some stuff now for UFC.com, and I saw Dana and Craig last night. So they are reminded you're there. You keep doing your thing. And even when that possibility was there to do – and when I was flying down for commentary, I made a decision about a year ago that I would want to keep this job no matter what. Now why? I like everybody here, and I love it here. And we do great things, and I'm proud to have been part of growing this thing. But it's also, this is the place where I can have the most growth. So you've got to make choices in your life where, not where you can make an extra $10,000 or have an extra week of vacation or whatever. You got to make choices based on where you can grow the most. And I can grow the most here. And so I'm going to commentate the UFC one day, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to work here, and I'm going to fly down on the odd weekend, and I'm going to do it. But leaving Mexico was tough. Right in the middle of it, my wife cried, and I got on I drove 2.5 hours to the airport, where I waited for 2 hours for a 5.5 hour flight, and I landed in LA, and I had an hour and a half commute to a hotel where I dyed my hair because it looked terrible, and I put skin cream on because my skin was all burnt up, and I studied all the fights that night, and I called the fights the next day, and then I stayed that night at 6 o'clock in the morning. I went another hour and a half to the airport, another 5 hours to Cancun, another 2 hours to the resort, where I had 8 more hours there with my wife. And then we flew 5 hours home. It was worth every fucking second. This is what I want to do. And if you want to do something, someone will do that. And it's got to be you. And I'm very proud that I did that. And I'll continue to do that. And I'll continue to do things like that to be able to get chances in my job to get better and to accomplish the things that I want to do. And that includes making the best stuff ever here at Fight Network, and flying around to commentate some UFC or to do breakdowns for UFC or Fox or whoever. And yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Okay, I don't know how long we've been, Chase. About an hour. If you stayed with me, I really thank you. I really do. This is going to be fun. The first 5 or 10 minutes, I was a little tight. And now I'm just having a time of my life. So I hope you guys are enjoying it too. And any comment, leave me anything. You can leave some hashtag questions in the YouTube comments if they're general. I think we'll do another one. You want to do another one next Sunday, Chase? What fights are next week? Uriah Faber's retirement. If you got questions about that, you can about that card, you can leave that in the YouTube place too. I don't think we'll be live next week, but we're going to get to that as soon as we can. And then it would be really fun to hang out with people and do that. I'm looking forward to it. Where does Choi versus Cub rank in all-time great fights? Yeah, we went over that one. Pretty fucking close to the top. Really. It was really special. I know it's something – I put it in the breakdown, and I know it's something I've been talking about a little bit. But don't get me wrong. Joe's the fucking man. So listen to Joe and Mike doing the commentary first. Or, you know, if it's Brian, Brian's fucking badass. And John Anik, man. When I commentate the UFC one day in the future, I'm going to do it with Anik. That guy's real talent. He's a legit guy. And the act of teeing up somebody is its own skill, and that guy has it. But after you've done that, and when you go to watch it the next time, or if you're listening to Joe's companion or whatever, another option is you turn it off and you crank some music. I like classical music, anything works. You'll be surprised. And share that idea. You can say you heard it from me, but you don't have to. you got to release ideas to the world. But what is your all-time favorite fight of all time? All time of all time? That was one of them. I don't know, man. There's so many. They change. The moments are special, and they start to fade after in a little bit in your memory. That's why, you know, whatever else I'm going to get to contribute to ever, I want to contribute to Fight Pass because I want to convince people to go back and appreciate the great fights. My wife, showed me some Celine Dion performance. And my wife is a singer, a high-level singer. She's in musical theater. And her and her friends and a couple of the dudes, you know, and they're all, oh, and they're crying and freaking out about it. And I watch it, and I'm like, okay, I get it. That you, because you can feel the moment in time of that. It isn't her voice. It's what she's experiencing and where. And I felt it. And when I watched it with them, I was like, why can't we have – find a way to celebrate certain moments of fighting like that. I'm going to go off topic here for a second, but I'm talking about my wife, who I love dearly. She's outside of fighting, outside of her fighting is the biggest thing. And outside of those two things, there's not that many things in my life right now, but that allows me to focus pretty good. Speaking of Uriah Faber retiring next week, and I told her, and she doesn't watch everything with me. She's really supportive and stuff, and she gets some of it. And she knows how excited I was for Choi and Cub and stuff. So I got home at 3:30 in the morning last night, and she was up enough to want to ask me about it. So that was really nice. So she said, Uriah Faber's retiring? And I said, yeah. And she goes, that the first time I ever watched a fight with you was Uriah Faber when he broke both his hands. And I was like, wow, that's really wild. Like Mike Thomas Brown, who has become a friend and I'm very much admire, and that's a brilliant fight. But if you have Fight Pass, go watch that fight. Go watch that fight. And then watch it. And in that moment, you'll be like, oh, fuck, this is my favorite fight of all time. And that's the nature of it. It's like, what's your favorite fight of all time? Right now, it's Cub Swanson versus Du Ho Choi, you know? But if I watch Uriah Faber and Mike Thomas Brown tonight, that'll be my favorite fight right then. But go watch that fight. And I was actually touched. My wife's the greatest, but I was just kind of blown away that she even knew what her first fight was. But that's a moving fight. At the end, Uriah broke one hand and badly damaged or broke the other. And, yeah, so that's pretty awesome. Mike Thomas Brown, if you're watching this, you should be working. But thank you. This is good. At the Body Temple. Good dude. Should young kids starting MMA today all engage in switch hitting and not favor one stance over the other? On our YouTube page, you can find my interview with Dwayne Ludwig. He makes everybody do that. That's 100%. He doesn't make you do a lot of things. He has some expectations of you as a student, whether you're a kid learning martial arts in his academy or TJ Dillashaw, but he makes you work both stances. There are reasons. There are arguments for both. There are. And these kinds of debates exist in all things, and you have to be honest about them, and you have to have an open mind. There's a time where flip-flopping is seen as a weakness. Gaining information, considering it, and allowing it to influence your thoughts is just being human. You know what I mean? Just being a good human. Like, if you are, you know, there was just the American election. Some of these people believe this no matter what. Doesn't matter what the evidence. And the other ones believe this no matter. It doesn't matter about the evidence. That's dangerous. That's not good for us. Anyways, I don't know where I'm going with that. But switch hitting, Dwayne, a genius, says absolutely. You should do that. And he makes everyone do it. And you can see that it's exploiting their opponents. You can see that it works. Marcelo Garcia, the greatest jiu-jitsu man on the planet, only works to one side. He only – I think it's to his left, but I'm not 100% sure. I assume it is. He's going to do a knee slide pass, only goes left. He's going to do a different pass, only goes left. He's going to retire – he works one side. He's working his half guard. He's on this hip. If he's on the other one, he works it back to this one. He works one side. Why? The argument is that if he spends – let's say he's got 30,000 hours and he spends 28,000 of them on that side – and 2,000 of them on finding the way to get to that side so he can do it always. And in his case, he can. Or maybe it's 3,000. Or maybe it's 30,000 hours and it's 24,000 of them are on working everything on one side and 6,000 are on getting to that side. And just working on getting to that side, most people aren't working to stop you from getting to that side. So that 6,000 hours is going to be enough. And now with Dwayne's thinking of going working both sides – he would have 15,000 here and 15,000 there. Well, Marcelo Garcia has 24,000. You have 15,000. So he's better. That's the argument. That's the simple argument. Now, Dwayne's answer, I'm putting words in his mouth, forgive me. So I shouldn't say this is his answer. My answer, if I look at, if I'm arguing for that side, is, yeah, so we will just beat you up in the transitions. We'll beat you up in the traveling from side to side. And that's what one of the things that I observe that he does and his guys do is it's not just here or here. And there's something he did tell me a little bit about, but I will be studying it more in his fighters. It is in the world of changing between here and here, there's an entire universe that nobody – if you stay only on that side, you are never exploring that universe. Of the moment of change between stances is a universe of choices and options and moments that happen in between the changing of those stances. Now you only stay this. You are never exposed to that universe. And so that, I think, is the argument for the changing of stances now. I think it – I believe Dwayne is correct. I also think the evidence says that he's correct when you see – and I'm not talking about wins and losses evidence, although that probably supports him pretty good too. I'm talking about the evidence of what you see in the moments that happen. So I think now – then later what usually happens is now you have to learn it all. And once you do, then people re-specialize on top of knowing it all. So the idea – the general way to compare this is – You became George St. Pierre. We called it a well-rounded fighter. Now you become a well-rounded fighter and have a specialty. So it used to be you were a specialist. Then he was a different specialist. Then you were a multi-specialist. You did jiu-jitsu and striking. Your wrestling wasn't very good. And then – and trust me, we're going to talk about it on another one of these. But wrestling, boxing, jiu-jitsu, it's kickboxing, all bullshit. All of those words are useless. If you ever – now we need to. So if we're a group of people that are talking about fighting, we don't go, whose wrestling is better? We don't say, oh, that guy has better striking. We don't. This is not – this is limiting thought. And it is – if we get to a point that as we're talking about fighting, we're like, well, this guy has better durability, but this guy is more mobile. This guy has better distance control. We are literally saying nothing. So we need to stop that right now, and we need to move way beyond that, and we're going to do that together. And we're going to figure it out together. I think if you could just – so we'll do a couple more, and then I'll let Chase cut this up, and we'll put it on the internet. Hit me up on Twitter, Robin Black MMA on Twitter. Let me know feedback. I need feedback. Like, I know parts of this will be terrible, and I need to know about them. And if parts of it are good, then it'd be nice to hear about that too. If you could change any rule about MMA, what would it be? Well, I personally, I would like free fighting with no rules. That's what would be the purest combat. No time limits and no rules. And I mean none. Do I mean none? I mean, yeah, I kind of do. I kind of do. I mean, the true pure combat, do it now. That is some fantasy world where I get to just study combat with people that desperately want to be in there proving it to themselves. But I don't live in that world. That world doesn't exist. We also need – this thing exists because people consume it. That's why I don't give the slightest shit about any of the politics of stuff. Irrelevant to me. The only thing that's relevant to me is that there is an environment created where martial artists get to go compete with each other. Now, do I want those martial artists to make enough money that they do it? Of course I do. Do I want the company to work in a way that it continues? Of course I do. But in general, as long as that thing's going on, all this other stuff is a distraction for me. I know that justice says certain things should have – this guy should get a title shot, this thing. But I don't have time for that. If I dedicate time to that, that'll be less time on the deep study. And that's – my thinking is that we get distracted by these things a lot. And a lot of them we all have zero control over. So if we get really angry that Dana said this or didn't do that or the company – we are now giving up part of our time, our most valuable resources, staring at something that is never going to change. And discussing, you know, a lawyer here and George St. Pierre's agent. And I don't give a fuck. I really don't. I need to see these fights. Now, but I realize that all of these things happen in a world that there are rules. So if there's biting, nobody's going to watch it. So then I will not be able to consume the art that I consume. And so that wouldn't work. if there's biting, nobody watches it, then Cub Swanson wouldn't get the ability to fight and make a living, which we need to be able to see this. If there was biting and nobody watched it, then the thing would cease to exist. These athletes and artists and the movement of it, it would all cease to exist. So yes, I would like to see pure combat, but that can't happen because we need people to buy the thing so that it exists. If they buy the thing, the fighters get to fight. If the fighters get to fight, we get to watch it. So you can't have biting, but it would be neat. What are your current dreams, goals in the current span of months, years? I talked about that a little bit. I don't think I've ever talked about that very much before. I feel good talking about it. I hope it was all right. I hope I didn't offend anybody or get out of line in any way. Robin, what advice would you give to someone starting an MMA podcast? I get that one a lot. And I get, you know, hey, I write this thing. How can I monetize it? Or I get like, you know, I want to get into the business. What do I do? And I answer those a lot. I do have a couple of little paragraphs that I've written before to other people, and I will occasionally cut and paste one in because there is a very simple – and not always and not entirely, but there is a simple explanation part that doesn't need to be spelled out every time. I can literally go and show it. And it's the hard part. It's the part that sucks. And my friend Jim over at MMA Latest, we were talking about this on Thursday night over a beer after the media thing, and he said that he gets that a lot. Jim is one of the partners at Latest. I'm not sure. He also does stuff for Flow Combat and someone else. He hasn't been home. I don't think he makes very much money. He's one of the few that's going to be paying his rent doing this, but he's also never home, and he's exhausted, and he's up writing till 4 in the morning. He's not at some after thing. And he says he doesn't give the answer very often because he thinks most people won't like it. And so there's no point. I do give it, but I'm straight with it. And that is, it's really fucking hard. And there are thousands. And whenever there's something that thousands and thousands of people would like to do, you need to get to a point where you're better than almost all of them. And there's no shortcut of that except for fucking hard work. Insane hard work for next to free, for no thanks, no support, no money, and lots of work. You got to outwork me and you got to outwork everybody else. And you got to get better than everybody else. And then you probably won't get paid for like 7 or 8 years. And then when you do, it won't be very much. So do you want to do that? If you're one of the guys going, yeah, fucking sign me up for that right now, well, there you're the guy who should do it. If you're everybody else and you're like, oh, man, well, what if I like SEO optimize this thing? And, you know, what if how do I like maybe get a job like you? No, you literally have to go and become so good. Because there's thousands of people doing it. So you have to give something that they can't get somewhere else, which means you have to work really fucking hard and you have to be different. You have to have something different, either some type of analysis or some type of interview skills or some contact or some – you make something. You animate something. Or you have to do something that somebody would want to see. Otherwise, you're one of the 3,000 that are just doing it. And that's okay. If you like it and it's fun, do it. And if you like it and it's fun and you're doing it, you're one of the people that'll probably get good anyways. You know what I mean? You'll get good because you like it. You'll get good because you're going to do it no matter what. And if you're going to do it no matter what, you're not the person sending Jim or me or Luke Thomas or whoever an email saying, how do I get paid? You're just fucking doing it because you're obsessed. You love it. It's what you would do in your spare time. You don't watch TV because you do this. And you're the guy who's going to do it. If you're not that guy, then, you know, I get it. It would be really fun to go backstage and interview Max Holloway. And that's why thousands of people want to do it. And so there's no shortcut, really. There isn't. But as with anything, if you want to be on the path, you will get better. And if you get better, then you'll learn ways to get better. And if you get even better, then you'll learn other ways. And you'll work 60 hours a week, but you'll do it because you love it. I couldn't work 60, 70, 80 hours. This was like the 16th day straight that I've worked. Not that this is work. And next Sunday, I'm going to take a day off, and it will have been 20 out of 21 days. And it's not work. Could I do this if I was selling, you know, pharmaceutical supplies? No, because I'm doing this because I passionately want to do this. So if you're that guy, then go do it. and it'll be wicked. And if you're not that guy, find the thing that you love that much and go do that thing. And if you don't have time, then stop doing some other things to do that thing. You know, don't watch HBO or Netflix or any of that shit. Just go do the thing that you like to do. And if you do that and you do it really well and you work really hard and you get better every day and you do it for a long, long time, you'll be good at it and then you'll be successful. Anything short of that will not work. So that's the truth. All-time favorite UFC fighter and why? We did go over some favorite things. It's probably Cub Swanson right now, and it's because he's a brilliant artist. It's because he's a friend. I'm still freaked out at what he said to me, but it's pretty neat. And I think should we wrap it up, Chase? I'll take another question, and then I'll just think, you know, fart out some whatever I'm thinking to say thank you. Joe Rizzo, Rear Naked Choke Radio. Hey, we should do another podcast. I love Joe, and they do a great job. Cannot wait because I must know. Hey, Robin Black MMA, what is the best ice cream flavor? Put a U in there. We do have a U in flavor in Canada and color. I don't know, man. I don't know. They got into some pretty fancy shit, you know, in the last few years. Like, if you get that Ben and Jerry's stuff, it's weird. Like, when I was talking to Greg Jackson, he was like, sometimes fighting can get very big or very small. Like, vanilla is tasty. It's vanilla. All of it is vanilla. You take a bite, that's what it is. It's 100% vanilla. You eat some of that crazy, like, you know, if I had a million flavors from it's fucking blasting you with a million different, you know, things and textures and flavors and crunch and stuff. I don't know if that's better. I don't know if it is. But that's what Cub Swanson tried to hit Du Ho Choi with last night, was that if I had a million flavors shit, to kind of, you know, never let him settle. It's just, holy shit, there's like a pecan in there. And wow, I just ate some chunky mint chocolate thing. And that, he overloaded him with if I had a million flavors. I can make anything about fighting. I want to thank you guys for humoring me in this. And I want to do this more, and I hope somebody likes it. And if you do, let me know. And if there's something I need to get better at, we're going to talk, maybe. I don't know. I'll be a different guy next week. But we're going to talk about getting better and chasing things and stuff, because that's important to me, and that's something I'm about. And so we're going to talk about that sometimes on this show. So, and ask me questions about fights. But as you say, I'll talk to you about anything, because it's fun. It's been really fun. And thanks, Chase. And thanks to James for making the groovy blue thing that says hashtag Ask Robin Black. And if you liked it, spread it around for me, please. And yeah, I will see you guys next week. Thanks. Enjoy the hostilities, my friends.